11 o'clock, Saturday night, Gaza Corner. And tonight it is about Gaza. And unless you have visited Gaza, and I would say none of you have, maybe one. I mean, it's so hard to get in. It's next to impossible to imagine what it's like to live in the world's largest open-air prison. The residents have none of the basic universal human rights that you and I take for granted. Electricity, travel, eating well, having access to medical care. 1.9 million Gazans are confined to an area 25 miles long and the width anywhere from like 4 to 7.5 miles, and subject to the longest running siege in human history. Began in 2007. To mark 10 years of closure on the Gaza Strip and 50 years since its occupation by Israel, the Israeli NGO Gisha, the illegal Center for Freedom of Movement based in Israel, they launched an interactive website, and it's called 50 Shades of Control, which is linked both in HTML and also PDF at the Tangents website. It describes how Israel controls every aspect of life in Gaza, everything, everything but hope. I received an email earlier today from a Palestinian. His email signature contains a quote from the late philanthropist Tony Martel. The quote is, "You can live 30 days without food, 7 days without water, but you can't live 60 seconds without hope," unquote. And despite Israel's every effort, Palestinians will never extinguish their hope of living in dignity. A thorough background paper prepared by American Friends Service Committee, also linked at the Tangents homepage, and the playlist is called Restricted Movement in the Occupied Palestinian Territory. I'm going to excerpt from the paper just a couple of paragraphs. Control of Palestinian movement has been a feature of Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territory since its inception in 1967. However, over the last 14 years, the draconian system of movement controls used by Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory has become increasingly institutionalized and restrictive. Taken together, all of these factors contribute to forced displacement, severely limit Palestinian access to basic resources, including land and water and basic services, including health care and education, and perpetuate a system of segregation and legal and structural inequality between Palestinians and Israelis. Understanding how Palestinians' freedom of movement is restricted is important to understanding the severe impact of Israel's occupation on average Palestinians. The paper provides background information on how Israel has restricted Palestinian movement and the impact that these restrictions have on Palestinians' lives. I think it's an important resource, again, linked at the Tangents homepage. Gisha's interactive webpage, again called 50 Facts That Prove Israel Still Controls the Gaza Strip, it goes over numerous restrictions on the Gaza Strip, which has been going on for decades. Although the noose on the Gaza Strip was notably tightened after Hamas was democratically elected in 2007, Gisha points out that Israel has legitimate security concerns and a right to individually screen people entering Israel. Yet Israel also has responsibilities enshrined under the laws of occupation. These are incorporated in the Hague Convention and in the Fourth Geneva Convention, from 1949, just 1 year after Israel's creation, they impose responsibility on the occupying state for the safety and welfare of civilians living in the occupied territory. Israel has done everything in its power to do the complete opposite. In fact, the UN stated that by 2020, the Gaza Strip will be uninhabitable. And I think a very sound case can be made that the Gaza Strip is currently uninhabitable. So how does suffocating the people of Gaza benefit Israel? After 10 years of a brutal blockade, Israel is no closer to achieving its political or security goals. Hamas is still in power. Three wars on Gaza in the last 8 years has destroyed any semblance of infrastructure in Gaza, caused endless misery, while Israel is viewed, I think, by more and more citizens of the world as a pariah state. Before I go into some of the 50 items mentioned by Guy Shah, I'll discuss one of the latest sick twists to how Israel controls freedom of movement in Gaza. A new restriction arose last year. It's both absurd and cruel. The exact wording of this law is, as a rule, any resident of the Gaza Strip who wishes to enter Israel and the West Bank for the sake of going abroad for various private purposes, if he gives a written commitment not to return to the Gaza Strip via Israel and the West Bank for 1 year, his request will be approved subject to a detailed security assessment, unquote. In a recent Times of Israel article, that's a newspaper in Israel, linked at the Tangent's homepage, Tanya Harry, executive director of Gisha, the Israeli Freedom of Movement Watchdog NGO, had this to say, quote, the fact that they made people sign after they had already received permits and were on the shuttle to go abroad indicates that the military authorities had already concluded that they met the criteria for travel from Gaza and did not pose a security threat. Wherever they are made to sign and at whatever stage, this is an unacceptable practice, unquote. Gisha also stated in a recent press release, after a number of Gazans were cleared to leave, and then after crossing into Israel were forced to either sign this waiver or be returned to Gaza, quote, we emphasize once more, these are individuals who had already been given an exit permit without it being conditioned on committing not to return to Gaza, indicating that the military authorities had already concluded that they met the restricted criteria for exiting Gaza and did not pose a security threat. Threatened with the possibility of missing the rare opportunity to exit Gaza and reach their destinations, many of the residents signed the waiver, which they had never seen previously. We believe undertaking a commitment of this sort has no legal validity, as it was essentially given under duress. This is yet another particularly infuriating example of the total disregard with which Israeli authorities treat the fundamental rights of Gazan residents, and a stark indication of the depth and extent of Israel's control over the details of their lives, unquote. The Israeli Defense Ministry body that administers the crossings from Gaza and who instituted this latest restriction, this Defense Ministry department is called the Coordinator of Government Activities in the Territories. The acronym is COGAT, C-O-G-A-T. The Times of Israel article points out that the COGAT website does not say that those who did sign the commitment form in their original application will be required to sign it after crossing over to the Israeli side of the border. The condition that one must remain outside of Gaza for at least a year is clearly a strong deterrent, since there's hardly any possibility of returning through Egypt's Rafah crossing. Over the past year, there's been a 55% reduction. That is a massive percentage, 55% reduction in the number of exit permits granted to Gazans by Israel. To conclude tonight's Gaza Corner, allow me to get back to Gisha's 50 Shades of Control, which describes 50 ways Israel controls diverse aspects of life in Gaza. I'm not going to go over every one, but I want to mention a few of them. One clear one is they've never allowed Gaza to rebuild its airport or seaport. Israel decides who is allowed to worship at holy sites. Israel restricts the spare parts and batteries needed for hearing aids for young children. Israel not only prevents almost all travel between Gaza and the West Bank and between Gaza and the outside world, but also dictates what goods can exit or enter the Gaza Strip, how much of them and when, and it severely restricts the entry of these items as well, items that are necessary for the operation of, for example, hospitals and schools, as well as the development of industry and business. Israel decides which patients are lucky enough to travel out of Gaza to receive life-saving medical treatment that is not available there. The ones who are unlucky die. Often. Israel prevents Gazans from traveling to marry outside the Strip. It controls Gaza's electricity. I recently dedicated a Gaza Corner to this, as Israel lowered the amount of electricity to about 3 hours per day from an already inhumane 4 hours, which not only makes normal life impossible, but hospitals can't function properly. Water cannot be properly treated, even if Gaza had functioning desalination plants, which were all but destroyed during the 2015 war, as were the utilities and the ability to dispose of sewage, which often sewage and waste just flow through the streets of Gaza, and much of it is also dumped into the sea, which prevents people from being able to use the sea to swim in. Israel prevents students in Gaza from studying in other parts of the Palestinian territory and denies unification of children who have lost a parent in Gaza with their other parent in the West Bank. Israel restricts the fishing zone to just 6 nautical miles and fires on boats who exceed the limit. Israel decides which family member can attend a funeral. Israel has literally thousands of items listed as dual use. Dual use will drive you crazy. It means it can be used for civilian use, but we also think it can be used for military use. Thousands of examples. How about this one? How about dental fillings? I mean, can you believe this? February of this year, they were confiscated at the Kerem Shalom crossing. I mean, up until then, there had never been a problem, but all of a sudden, dental fillings? I went to a talk by ANERA, A-N-E-R-A, which is an NGO that actually has the blessing of the State Department to ship humanitarian aid to Gaza, and they have all these stories of the most ridiculous things being held up at the border, getting into Gaza. Israel routinely classifies elderly people, children, medical patients as security threats, thus preventing them from qualifying for travel permits. Gazans, I mean, they could export lots of produce, could help the economy. Israel only allows eggplant and tomatoes. And here's one final one I'll mention. Israel allows the marketing of furniture out of Gaza, but they prohibit the importing of wood. So how are the Gazans supposed to build furniture? All of Gaza Corner segments are saved. They're archived at the Gaza Corner Archive at Tangents.com, including the audio and the stories that I used to research what is discussed.